Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode.
So I want to ask you something before we start, Matt. Are you okay?
I am in general, but not today, which is okay. It's okay not to be okay some days. We've had another project, looks like, fall over. So I'm okay in the sense of, like, everything's going great. I've got a new little girl and she's a unicorn. Let's just say that she's sleeping 10 hours a night. So sorry to all those newborn parents that aren't getting that. So I am in general okay.
Yeah.
Just today's a crappy day. But look, sun will rise tomorrow.
Do you know what I love that you did there, Matt, is that you kind of, you zoomed out for a second, you know, because you can get so caught up with, like, what's in front of your face and get so bogged down with, like, a shitty day or a shitty client or a shitty staff member, and it completely derail everything. And yet your default there was, you know what, I've had a shit day today, but I've got all this other great stuff that's happening in my life. And I don't know if we do that enough.
We're joined today by Alistair. This is coming out in a week that we're going to talk about. You're going to hear it a lot through media and social media, Are You Okay Day? To me, every day should be Are You Okay Day? We're allowed to celebrate it more than anything on one day. I think it's the 11th of September. Am I correct?
Yep.
Cool. So, Alistair, you're an ambassador for Are You Okay? That's correct?
Yep.
Do you want to give us a bit of an overview of, like, what is Are You Okay Day?
It sort of came out of the Larkin family and Gavin, who just decided he was going to do something about this after having some personal aspects of his life, you know, with things like suicide and there was some illness in his family with his kids and he even had illness himself, which actually was quite tragic. But I guess the movement there was there's a moment, and I think it was kind of mid-90s, where Gav just realised there wasn't a lot of people talking about things like suicide or just mental health in general, you know. And it was all very stoic, quite macho, whatever. But and he sort of, being the person he was, and I didn't really know him, but I know his family, and just sort of went, well, we're going to do something about this. And I guess the beauty of what he's probably put forward or what the organisation's come is just a grassroots, sort of that informal aspect of just checking in with people and just trying to create a message around that, you know. And because, and you know, they say a conversation can change a life or save a life, and it's true. You know, so I kind of gravitated to that. Personally, I think it's just good to look after people. I do it for my work, you know, things like life-saving. I don't know. It's good form to take care of yourself and other people. And I just like that this is a very grassroots organisation that just focuses on people talking to people. There's all the other aspects like Black Dog, Lifeline, Beyond Blue, that sort of stuff that are probably more technical and specialist care. But there's a hell of a lot you can do on the ground level, just people talking to each other.
But they do all do great things. That's the thing.
Oh, they do, yeah. But for different moments, you know, like any medical issue, you know, sometimes you need a physio, sometimes you need a surgeon, and that's okay. But you know, a lot of the heavy lifting, or not even the heavy lifting, but can happen at a very fundamental grassroots level.
Yeah. So we have a psychologist that comes on our podcast regularly, Julie, and she probably had it was probably one of the first few episodes, Hamish, where she made the question about, like, I asked the question about, is it okay to ask someone, are you okay? And her comment was like, well, someone's got having a heart attack. Do you ask them if are they okay? Do you want to get a doctor? She's like, what's the difference with the brain? And it was just like, like, what, why do we not ask if it's okay? Do you have any maybe thoughts or insights into that sort of conversation?
We've actually got some fresh research that has come out and that sort of stuff that, you know, 3 in 4 people actually agree that it's important to ask someone, which I think is quite interesting because all they agree, and in a lot of ways they sort of say it's a good idea to do it, but only 1 in 3 people feel comfortable doing it. So even on that, if you look at those sort of numbers, you're thinking, okay, most people want it, but not everybody feels they can do it. But, you know, things like invading people's privacy, I don't want to say the wrong thing, it might make it worse, don't want to embarrass them, don't want to judge them. And I think even personally early on is, you know, something might come up that you can't handle. You know, someone might put a fair bit out in front of you and you think, well, I don't know whether I can solve that. You know, so sometimes people feel they need to get in there to solve the problem, which is not the case. You know, it doesn't have to be the case, you know. And even in, I think in a very human way, not all of us sort of have the confidence to rock up and say, how are you? You know, because, I don't know, there's a bit of a step there. There's some social risk aspects and there's some cues in it. And it can be a really quite an emotional conversation. And I think that can be really tricky to turn up. So my thing is it takes more guts to turn up than not. And, I totally respect people that sort of have that moment.
I've never, like, I can only personally speak from my own experiences here, but every time I've asked someone, are they okay? I've never, ever had someone come back and get angry at me for asking that question.
Yeah, you're right.
So
they'll say, I'm all right.
One of the other things to really, to kind of sit in for a second is that you said, you know, it's not up to you to solve their problem.
Yeah.
You know, I think Simon Sinek says it really well. You know, quite often you just want to sit in the mud with them. You know, just be there, listen to them, you know, let them just tell you what's on their mind and you sit there and just listen to it and actually not think you need to solve it. Because, you know, I'm a builder, Matt's a builder, you're a, you know, risk management person, lifesaver, father, whatever. You know, we're not necessarily trained to solve this problem, but actually just sitting there and listening to someone and being the facilitator of that release of pressure or stress could sometimes just be that moment that person needed.
Because if you look at it's not a script, but it's a pretty well-worn path that Are You Okay come up with. And it's like how to have that conversation, which is like you ask how you're okay and then you sit there and listen. We call it the ALEC, A-L-E-P-C, ALEC. So you ask and you listen. But the third part is what you're talking about there is you encourage action, right? And then later on you check in, you know. So the encouraging action, I almost see it working at its best when you're a linker, you know, because the thing is, like, if you need a psychologist, for example, or if you need some help, they're not often at the barbecue, you know, but you are.
Yeah.
So this is how do you find these people? Don't you know there is a difference between finding and locating and you know connecting and solving. It's a different thing. So I kind of almost see them as a catalyst, like someone who connects people, and you encourage action as opposed to having to take it yourself. So that's probably, I believe, Are You Okay went at its best in some ways. It's just turning up and, you know, as you say, Harry, sit in the mud, be real, be authentic. But you know you don't want to sit in it forever, and you want to say, well, okay, let's get something done. You know, what do you want to do? What works for you? And then connect them in, and hopefully they take some action. But even just as you say, Hamish, just allowing the problem to be shared does release pressure. Often, somebody who just can understand or at least acknowledge what's going on can be enough for some people. To be honest, they can sort of think, okay, well, I've got enough energy to go and do something else. Yeah.
Going back a year and a half, the reason Hamish and I started this podcast was to touch on two aspects of what we considered really important in construction, and we do have building businesses in residential construction. One was to talk about building better and how we can improve the building stock in Australia and educate tradies and builders and homeowners and professionals about how to build better. The second was the mindfulness side of things, thus why we're called the Mindful Builder.
Yeah.
But there's a real shocking statistic that I have come across before, and it is that a construction worker is more likely to die by suicide than it is by a workplace accident, which the industry loses on average 190 people per year, which is equivalent of someone taking their life every second day. That's why it's so important for our industry to talk about it, because predominantly it is a male dominated industry and men typically don't or are not the greatest. They're getting really good at it, at talking up. And it's. I'm probably sure in your 12 years of doing this, you've seen a huge improvement in males speaking out. But how do we further grow that? How do we get more people to talk up about this and be confident to not have to rely on someone to come to them, but they can go to someone else and say, hey, I'm not feeling great.
If you can't talk about something, you can't solve it. So that, I just think that's the first point, is to get out there and just start talking about something. And the other part is that, and I think maybe it's even generational, you know, that we, you know, males are stoic. And I mean, I've watched enough movies of how to be tough and all that sort of stuff. And you know, apparently I had to run around and do everything and be everything to everyone. But it's not the case, you know, because I think, you know, if you look at mental health statistics, particularly with men, it's really high. And, you know, if you look at suicide statistics, it's exceptionally high. And so, and those are statistics. What I mean by that, they're real. It's happening. So you can either not talk about something that's happening or you can. So the fact is people are starting to talk about it. So that's the first thing. And it's okay to talk about it. And then I think as you do more of it, Matt, you sort of start to go like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought, you know.
Yeah, the first one's the hardest, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, same with children, you know. But it's
thanks.
You know, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, it, all renovations. But it feels like giving birth. But, what is important is to destigmatize it and actually just make it fluid, you know. And it's okay not to be okay, which I think is all right, you know. And there's a lot of statistics. And the more we just talk about it, the softer it comes, if that's right. So
Before we actually got on this podcast, you're talking about how you're involved in improving culture within business.
Yeah.
Now we talked, you just sort of spoke on the subject of like the macho culture of sort of older generations. Mm. How about when we talk about culture, how about cultural differences? Because in some cultures, it might not be, it'd be very frowned upon talking out about this. And the reality is the construction sector is a very multicultural profession. How do we maybe navigate that space when you might have someone from a different culture who that would be seen as very weak potentially speaking out? Because I feel like that's a conversation that I've never had to have. How would I go about that?
So I say that's fine. But you kind of, at the end of the day, what are you trying to do? What do you want as opposed to what have you already got? And one thing that I'm pretty passionate about is safety, which, you know, might sound weird, but, you know, and safety tends to get a bit of a compliance lens on it all the time, worried about, oh, will I get caught? And, you know, it's not about people, it's about lawyers a lot of the time. I'm probably a bit outspoken on that, but I think, you know, all safety is preventative maintenance for your asset, you know, which is your body and your mind. And if you look after it, you'll make more money, you know. But at the end of the day, how you do that, I don't mind. So, you know, if people want to have these beliefs about certain things, I have no worries. But at the end of the day, if we're all trying to be safe and that belief doesn't support it, they're not. I don't believe you should keep it, you know what I mean? I just think if it's counterproductive to the mental health of somebody, you know, and what might be okay there, but it's kind of what you want and what your standards are, and then, you know, not trying to steamroll to say you've got to be this and a cookie cutter, but you find a way to deliver this standard, you know. And I think a lot of businesses are now saying, well, yeah, no, it's not okay to bully and harass people. It's not okay to do this sort of stuff. And you establish that standard, which is great. There's a lot of legislation around that, for example, with psychological safety. And now we've got it and we just move people towards that. But what I will say is not like you got to give yourself away or your culture. And I usually find a little 5 or 10% kind of massaging of what we normally do is enough, you know. And that's kind of really important, because I think sometimes I say, well, you got to change your culture, it's like wholesale. No, it's not. It's actually just about, these things here are important when we all need to do this. You do it. But again, this is the standard we need to uphold. We have standards all through, Australian standards on construction, all this sort of stuff. This is just another standard. And usually that standard's around behaviour, you know. And, you know, we also have now a standard on looking after each other with mental health. And we establish that. We work to it, you know. And you can drive that through legislation, but I think it's more effective in community. But, yeah, you do get a lot of different approaches. I've seen and heard some people say some quite incredible things over my time. And they usually say it because that's just what they've always said.
That comes down to everything, right? Like education or your environment comes down to, you know, how you then respond, that you are a product of your environment. And if I don't use the example of like the little bubble that Matt and I operate within, and that's the sort of high performance sort of construction space. We kind of look outside of that little bubble and look at all these people who aren't building the way we are, and we know that it's a better way to do it, but they don't know about it. They're not educated by it. So it's all about coming in and educating them on how to build better. I did a slight kind of step back to something you said before. You talked about psychological safety.
Yep.
Could you just explain that in a little bit more depth? Because it is a new term that is very relevant to us as business owners.
I've just stolen all my question notes.
He probably does that a lot, Matt.
Yeah. I do. I look over and look at him whenever.
Plagiarism's the old form of
fun. I've literally just deleted like five of my questions because he just
I know. Well, you, Haim. He thought your questions were so good, they're now his questions.
I'm going home.
By sort of definition, psychological safety is the management of interpersonal risk. So that's kind of the definition. It's the risk between people, all right? And, I guess so if you look at a hazard, particularly as something that can hurt you, right? So a nail can hurt you, or a bit of equipment. Well, people can hurt you and opinions can hurt you and behavior can hurt you. Is that right? So it's now looking at or what they call psychosocial risk. So, a hazard leads to a risk. So they're managing that risk between people, okay? And because if you look at it the other way, people can get hurt, which I guess in this case would be trauma. And people need to take a bit of time off work or they need some, some help, professional help to help them through an injury or what they call a psychological injury, yeah? And I guess my sense is if you create a culture that's sort of supportive and positive, then you can lower that interpersonal risk, And what comes with that is there's risk between people. I better not say that to them because they might say this, all this sort of stuff. So, indicators are low levels of trust between people. I don't know whether I can trust him with that information. I don't know whether I can say that to that manager because he might respond this way, all that sort of stuff. I guess probably why it's more topical is now it's legislated. Right, and it's legislated right across the all states that you need to manage psychological safety on your site, just like you manage any other risk. They've actually outlined, which is good. Like I think it's about 15 or 16 different hazards. It's all in the code, and but it's things like bullying and harassment, things like work overload, work underload, lack of control of your job. Ambiguity and uncertainty, things like this, but things that put pressure on your mind. And I mean, it's interesting because I do a lot of work in mindfulness and understanding the nature of mind. And, it's your podcast in a sense, but a lot of people just aren't aware of those things that place pressure on their mind and even how to manage it. So like the things that we do is like emotional intelligence, regulation. We work on mindful awareness, these sort of things, but that's why. So I hope that answers it, but it's really... Now, a mature aspect is we're looking after the physical safety of people, but also the mental safety, So mental health being I'm not healthy mentally, which means I'm kind of injured or I'm not 100%. I guess psychological risk is probably a little bit more acute, if that makes sense. So, but anyway, it's pretty well the number one claim, And I think I saw some, if you want to talk business and you want to talk dollars and cents in some ways, it makes a lot of sense not to psychologically injure you say. And a lot of people say, well, how do I do that? Well, just create a culture where there's respect and dignity. And I also create a culture where it's okay talking about this, but it's okay not to be okay and be more inclusive and less judgmental. Some people say that's a bit soft. No, I've seen some sites that do it fabulously, which have fantastic banter, If anything, it's kind of brutal in some ways, but it's always from a caring or supporting place. And, so it's not a soft thing. It's more just an inclusive thing.
I'm going to try and talk through this carefully because I'm going to be really – I'm nervous about saying this the wrong way. So I'm going to apologize in advance to everybody if this makes me sound like a dick, but I'm going to say it anyway because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are probably thinking the same thing. If we think of like pain as a tolerance threshold, right? So we've all got different. I know one of my sons has a much higher pain threshold than the other son that I've got, right? I would say mentally, we probably as people have different thresholds of whatever we feel like impacts us or what hurts us. I understand, like, we just want to be good to each other, right? We want to treat each other like human beings. But, And again, I'm not making any excuses for what the industry is, but, you know, we are predominantly men and, you know, we have a history of, you know, I guess, ribbing each other, you know, because it's a bit of fun and it's a bit of whatever and all a little bit of banter. You know, some people might be impacted by that quite severely, even if it's just a bit innocuous and just you think it's sort of just workplace banter.
Yes.
How do we navigate that when some people might be severely impacted and other people are just like, well, what, just water off a duck's back? Because it's not visible. Like a cut on the arm is a cut on the arm, right?
Yep.
If you cut your arm with a, you know, a cut on you and a cut on me and a cut on Matt's the same, right? It's a visual injury. I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to say here.
It's very clear. Like you've actually worded that really well.
People say I've got a lot on my plate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's your plate, right? And here's the load coming on the plate. And when it goes over the edge of your plate, it gets messy, yeah? Right? So here's the plate, here's the load, and here's the mess, right? So if you are, and I guess, how do you know someone's being overwhelmed or is a little out of control or overloaded? What would you say you see in people?
Stress. Right.
Visibly stressed. Yep. They're short.
What does that look like?
How
do you pick that up?
Well, it's a hard one because, like, for someone like myself, like, I can hide it very, very well.
Yep.
Like, but I've got people that I know that, like, put any of my stress onto them and who they would be, crumbling.
So, either way, I find it usually, because, you know, kind of there's character and there's out of character is maybe another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Yep.
No?
Yep.
And there's some people, I believe, that have got a plate about this big and there's some people who've got a plate that big, right? And why have they got a plate that big? The answer, which sounds a bit, you know, cop out, because they do.
Yep.
They do. Some people haven't experienced as much as other people. They just haven't, and they've actually come to your workplace with the plate they got, right? And I don't judge that plate. It's just the plate you got, right? So you've got some options here, because if this is happening, I'll give you an example, and I do a lot of leadership coaching. You go and put some more on that person. What do you think will happen to the load?
Oh, the plate would just snap.
Is more will overflow. You know.
Yep.
So here we go. Here's the, here's the pasta, here's the plate, here's the overflow, right? And the overflow is messy and it can be very traumatic when people get emotional, right? So I just sort of see emotion, out of character, this sort of stuff as an indication that people aren't coping with what they got, because we all have a mental capacity, right? How much we can shove through. And some people have an incredibly high threshold for ambiguity and uncertainty. You know, some people can, mining guys that, you know, they get sacked and they laugh and go, okay, I'm going to get another job. And then I meet other guys that, you know, will wallow around and go, oh my God, what's going to happen? You know, they're just same problem, different response. Yeah. So I guess what you can do is take pasta off the plate, you know, or take load off that person is one solution, but that's less work, you know, or less whatever it is. And that's, you know, sometimes legislative, they're trying to do that is to make sure to speak to people properly, but things happen. When someone's overflowing, I guess get someone else's plate to help you. You might be in trouble yourself, so someone can step in. And one thing I would also say, it doesn't happen every day. Just like you've said, Matt, you have your good days and bad days. There's days where you overflow and there's days you're not. There's days where your kids get to you and there's days that they don't, and your spouse or whoever, you know. So having it in perspective and having some infrastructure to help you there. But I actually, third part is building a bigger plate. So I guess what's interesting, and that's something to think about, I guess, is how do we build, some people call it resilience, but, you know, I guess another thing that's proportional to plate size is acceptance. You know, how flexible are you? And if you want to talk about, there's your mindset, how much of a fixed mindset or growth mindset have you got? You know, and what are you doing about that? But anyway, if you start to see success or coping with load and things like that as this ability to grow your plate in a functional way, you know, you can functionally do that. So having systems, and because what I see leadership as is the ability to grow people. I see management as the ability to manipulate people, rightly or wrongly. And, you know, management's probably more outcome-focused, and leadership in some ways is process-focused. Build good people and they do great work, you know. So that's one way I sort of try and frame it for people, because once you frame what you're trying to achieve, you can usually get it done. But I just also wanted to sort of say there, you can actually, in your own way, Matt, or maybe, you know, but just detect when people are just a little out of character. They might be a bit quieter. They might be, I don't know, a bit more aggressive. They could be stressed. They could be talking about things.
That's some also hard on a building site.
Their emotions. Yeah, you go. Sorry,
it's hard on a building site because sometimes you might not see that team for a week or, and you miss it or you, like it was for a few days and all of a sudden they've spoken. Yeah, but you and then some no one wants to speak up because it's the first year apprentice. Like that's where it can get really, really challenging.
Yeah, it is. And you just touched on another point is that silence, you know, why they would do that, you know, why don't they have the courage to speak up about things because they're managing that interpersonal and social risk. Can you see that? So like that, when you have really high levels of psychological safety, people speak up because it's okay. You're not going to get reamed out or, ooh, I'm going to get offended and stuff like that. And that does take time in some sense to build that level of trust. But one thing I would say, Bud, if this is my thing, I mean, I've been a business improvement engineer for many years as well. And, you know, if you improve the safety, you improve the business. But if you have a focus and I want to achieve this, then usually you can find a solution, if that makes sense. I mean, you want to build something that does this, you figure out a way to do it. So if you want to build a plate, you refine a system to build it, you know. But one thing I would say is just realizing that different people have different capacities, you know, they have different levels of when they overflow and when they don't. And then having systems to catch that, EAP, are you okay, all that sort of stuff. But even in the long term, how can we help people cope with ambiguity and stress better?
And that's probably hard for both Hamish and I, who probably have a very big plate that we can deal with.
Yeah.
And then when you got someone, I'm not saying we have people that do that, that have a small plate, and you're like, I think what Hamish is sort of saying is like, just fucking deal with it. Like well, that's probably the old way of thinking.
Yeah, you can, but if they're not, it's kind of absurd without being harsh. But that's kind of, I just think, you're not coping with the amount of load. So why don't I give you some more load or some more judgment? So
that's also what companies do to move people on too, is they will overload them to,
you know, they can do that.
Manage them.
Yeah. I don't find them to be terribly mature businesses in some ways, but I just think, you know, and this is somebody who's worked in some pretty heavy industries for many years. Empathy might sound like a soft term, but it's effective, right?
Yeah, totally.
Most guys would appreciate more empathy than not. They actually just respond better, even though we have this sort of perceived belief or image or story that's out in our culture sometimes. But when you actually get to the grassroots, and I have a lot of these conversations, goes down better.
I was just about to say, you know, and Matt is probably right, you know, the plate that I generally operate off, I would say, is pretty big. Mm. But I will say sometimes that big plate is a fucking small plate as well. On different days, I might not have slept right. I might be out of sync with my exercise. My diet might not be as keyed in as what it has been. And sometimes the plate that I was operating off yesterday is the plate I'm operating off today is like half the size. And it's probably important to note that I know I experience that, but it's also, as business owners, we need to know that our team experiences that too, because something that they might have been able to just show up and get done one day, they might respond completely different the next day.
They shouldn't do that, you know, but look, I've had a two-year-old and it's evidence. What worked today didn't work yesterday. And I'm like, what happened? I thought that was the key. Yeah, you know, we have lots of occasions in other areas of our life where the target moves. But what I would say, and, you know, even you guys in that mindful sort of space, having some sort of awareness of that, being actually aware of what's happening as opposed to what you think should be happening, is quite important. Having doing a bit of this work myself, I just think I get further, you know what I mean? And if you're going to manage people and you've got this problem, which has statistical proof, listening to people and moving in this space tends to be just more effective, if that makes sense. We're talking about getting stuff built or getting things made or getting stuff done, right? Whatever gets it through the pipe quicker or gets it through, processes it better, why not? You know what I mean? So that's what I kind of get into. And a lot of people say, well, that's not the way to do it. I just find it more effective, to be honest. And one thing I would say is if you do focus on that aspect and know that it changes, you can see it better. Does that make sense? You know?
Yep.
I don't know. One thing I was just going to respond to you, Matt, is just sort of how do you build it? You know, like how do you go to the gym, right? If you go to the gym and you're not very fit, right, do you go and lift 100 kegs and go for it?
Try to and then hurt yourself.
Yeah, and then hurt yourself and actually injure yourself. So here's a concrete milkshake, harden up and get on with it. It's probably 100 kegs for someone. 5 kegs might be all right, but the thing is, the goal is 100, but often we don't have the time to invest in people. And I get that. Kind of absurd also to think that everybody's going to be psychologically fit or physically fit every day. You guys would have seen lots of backs in your day that one guy can lift and another guy can't. I don't know. Not every mind is rated at the same lifting capacity.
It's a good point to take away, I feel. I haven't really thought about the whole plate situation before, that everyone has different plates.
I guess the genesis of us having a chat today is about Are You Okay Day. And yep. I mean, I think that I'm pretty empathetic and I'm pretty good at checking in with people. But even us having this conversation right now, I've written a few things down in my little notepad here of three people that I definitely need to check in with. And they're my staff members. And if I actually think about some of the things that I've conversations I've had with them, the pressures they're under at work at the moment, and I'm kind of putting this pressure on them and then kind of stepping away and not really thinking about it. But just having this conversation with you today, like, I need to sort of circle back and really check in with them and say, hey, I know we had this conversation yesterday or 2 days ago, just checking in to see how you're going, because I don't know what that person's thinking now. In my mind, I'm thinking we've set our piece and we're working, you know, everything's all good, but how are they? And same with, you know, a couple of my supervisors who are under an incredible amount of pressure to hit a couple of milestones over the next 3 days. And I'm, you know, they're kicking ass on site at the moment, but I'm just, I guess, almost taking it for granted that that's happening and not kind of closing that loop and saying, hey, I just want to check in and thank you. There is a point to all this. We're talking about this one day in September, right? And I love the fact that it's just this yearly reminder. But how do we integrate these check-ins?
It's meant to be, Hamish, but now, I don't know if it's got – on the back of my shirt, it's got ask every day. So
ask every day.
Yeah, well, look, you know, at least we've got one day that we just have – you know, and they have days for everything. But, you know, we're having one day where we talk – but, look, we're trying to integrate because you know, if it doesn't fall on the 11th of September, you're in trouble. You know, what you're talking about there, Hamish, is like a control loop. You know, if you were going to look at to make sure that the quality of construction of the house you're building or whatever you build, you know, you'd probably go and have a look at it a few times, and you probably audit it to check it's okay. So, and the word I'd use is that it's up to standard. You know, so it sounds weird, but I do a lot of, for example, like safety interactions where I'll watch a job to see whether that job's up to standard for someone's back. I just watch them and say, okay, that could probably do their shoulder, as opposed to that there, if I don't get that concrete poured, it could fall over later, you know. So it's whatever the problem you're looking at. And then I also, if you've got a little bit of a lens on this guy's a bit emotional, I'm just going to check in, as you say. It's funny, you mightn't find anything, great, just like any sort of inspection on an asset, you know. But you might check in and find something. And, you know, you can't fix anything that's not on the radar. So if you don't look for it, and this is probably a little harder conversation than what we're talking with Are You Okay, but you do, most people pick up on stuff, you know, but what I'm encouraging, or at least, you know, just take some action in a soft and sort of empathetic way, and you'll probably get somewhere, you know. And I really, you can diffuse a lot of this stuff. You can sort of nip it in the bud before it grows to be something a little bit more, you know. But as you say there, Hamish, high pressure situations, the overflow is pretty likely. Another way I like to put it is like a pipe, and you're trying to shove things through a pipe. You put too much pressure on it, they crack. So I don't know if you know about pressure regulators. That's how I explain it. If you've got a lot of pressure on, you need to regulate until you get a bigger pipe. And so if you want to talk about emotions, talk about pressure, because pressure on a pipe, the squeeze on the side of the pipe is probably the best analogy for emotion I can give you.
I mean, you go into organisations and you help them with change, and you help them with safety, and you help them with optimising the workforce. What are some of the things that we can do? And I'm not saying try to find that point where we're finding that crack in the pipe. How do we better understand the abilities of our staff members and our team?
I firstly think it needs to be important, right? As you say with Simon Sinek, start with why, you know, and a lot of people just don't see safety as important.
But do you think the industry's moved that way because it's potentially there's been like too much paperwork and too much?
Probably. Yeah.
I have
my own personal opinion on that. But if the paperwork's not helping your back or your shoulder, then I don't see it as safety paperwork.
Yeah.
I see it maybe as compliance paperwork, which we do all have to manage a legal risk. I have no problems with that. And I'm not trying to be contentious.
No, but you're
you tend to do that as well. But again, at a very base level, Hamish Evans talking about why you'd want to be safe is because you want to look after yourself. Actually, this might work, but I talk to a lot of people. I think I've trained probably close to 18,000 people anyway. The number one thing I sort of say, what's the number one reason you go to work?
And money.
And if I do guys on night shift, it's 0.1 second. It's like money, right? And yeah. And the number one reason, why do you need the money? Is it's life, right? You need petrol and fuel for your life. Yep.
Yep.
And the number one reason your business probably wants you to go to work is to make their money. Is that all right?
Yep.
Yep.
You don't sell houses for free. If you did, you could come and work on mine, right? Because it's getting expensive anyway. But if you think about it, what do you think your number one financial asset is, personally, yourself?
People. Well, no, me.
Yourself.
Yeah.
Financial.
Yeah, yeah,
most mate, people's yeah. house.
Your house, you think it is?
No. I think people
most. Me.
Yeah, yeah. Me.
What do you think? Me. Is that more important? Is that worth more money or your back?
No. I agree. I'm just saying I think most people think it's like their house.
Yeah, or they call super or yeah. something like that. But your ability to earn money is your number one asset.
Yeah.
Number one asset, because if I turned it off today, there is no house and no super. There's no interest.
Yeah.
And or your ability to retain a job. And the easiest, probably the quickest way to lose that is to have some sort of injury.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I'd ask, and you might be able to tell me on a building site, what do you think the top three ways for somebody to have a permanent injury would be? Or an injury that they're off work for 6 to 12 months.
So one is psychological.
Yeah, psych is up there now.
Over lifting too much.
Lifting.
Right. Fall from height
or dropped objects. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or vehicle movements. So that's what I start there. You know, fingers and manual, you know, but start with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Because if you want it, all safety is preventative maintenance for your asset. And if you can get that through, Hamish, and you know, if you get the why right, then you go, okay, I need to physically make sure your asset doesn't break down, your body, right? Because it's important. But also got to make sure your mind doesn't break down. It's important too.
And that's if you go back to simple things of like,
just
yeah, like if you're not okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're not okay, you might be about to break or crack. You know, I think, you know, there was a term the other day of silent cracking. There's a lot of pressure on people at the moment and they're kind of cracking, but they don't know, you know, and unemployment in some areas is really not as good as it was, you know.
I feel that in our industry right now.
Yeah.
I reckon everyone's walking on eggshells.
With mortgages and stuff, and I'm very conscious of talking about this, but there's pressure. There is real pressure. And I think just acknowledgement of that and having a little bit of a connection on that is really, really good. So it's a great place to start.
Yeah, if you're not okay and you can't go to work,
it's not good for you. It's not good for the business. Not good for anyone.
I think we've had a great conversation, and it's probably gone to places where I probably didn't think it was going to go, but it is all like really relevant. So we talked about we should be checking with people every day, right? But September 11 is really a great reminder. It's just this top up that people probably need to hear every year to be like, oh, hang on a minute. Yeah, it is something that we need to think about. What are some of the things that we should do on that day? So I've gone to work. I've gone to work and I've got all my staff members here and I'm checking in with them. What am I doing?
Firstly, acknowledge that there's probably someone right now in the business or at work who's having problems, right? And that's happening right now. So, you know, and it's the four steps, which is ALEC, A-L-E-C, which is ask if you're okay. And then at that point, listen, you don't have to say anymore. And they'll probably talk. Most of the time they do. And you're not, but again, and then encourage action is the third one, which is just, let's do something about this, how you're feeling about this, all that sort of stuff, and then check in later, as you've said there, Hamish, you know. And that's just a very simple process that is pretty well the backbone of are you okay, right? So more of those conversations, the better. So we're encouraging people to go and look for it, for one, and if they see something, have that moment if they can. And you know, not social courage, just realize that, and I think it was 3 and 4 people are actually looking for.
We spoke about earlier before about some people might be a bit scared to go up and ask someone if you're okay. I think the good thing about Are You Okay Day kind of gives you a get out of free jail card to go ask and start that ability to get your confidence to ask people, are you okay? Because you can kind of, shouldn't say get away with it on that day, but more people are going to be aware of it. So just might give that little bit more confidence to ask it the next day, the next day, the next day.
That's kind of what I was getting at before, right? Like we have this really nice reset once a year where we're encouraged to, and it's okay to ask if people are okay on this day because it's just, it's out there. But
and
but
someone goes up there and goes, "Why'd you say that to me?" And so I was, "Are you okay?"
Yeah, are you okay?
Okay, sorry, mate. Was are you okay? Yeah.
And no one's going to do that anyway. No one's going to ask, why are you asking me? Like, everyone's going to go, "I'm okay."
Yeah. Well, you know, some people don't respond, but a lot of people go, "Oh, thanks." Actually, I get a lot of thank yous, you know, heaps of thank yous. I've had people, you know, I had a guy the other day who we were at a local market the other day, and he saw the yellow thing, and he just had to pull over and talk to me because he had a lot on, and it was parenting, basically, you know, and he was really run down and, you know, staying up and all that sort of stuff with kids and that. But, you know, we had a chat and that sort of stuff. And at the end of the day, he just shook my hand, held my hand, and just said, "Thank you." And he looked me in the eyes, and which I just know, I just thought it was a good moment. You know, I don't know over the top or anything like that. I thought that's pretty good social currency. Shook my hand and off we went, you know. But more people you can connect in that space to someone else or some help, the better.
I think you touched on something probably really important there, is that you actually got something out of that.
Oh, absolutely!
Like that you felt good about that, and I think that that's okay to have those feelings, because I reckon some people will be like, "Oh, well, hang on, why am I feeling all happy that I've just helped that person?" But I think it's important to encourage people to do that, because you do get this, you know, this serotonin or endorphin release after you've gone and helped someone. Because it's a fucking good thing to do. Check in on someone, make them feel good, you feel good, and then, you know, that kind of permeates into the rest of your day life.
I very rarely come out of a situation where someone shakes my hand like that thinking, "Oh, what a waste of time." Get in there and help your mates. And if they're struggling, I don't care how they're struggling, if they're limping or whatever, you don't laugh at them or you don't whatever, you just get in there and help them.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No, it's good chat, guys. And it's good work you're doing. I think it's really important.